Support for this podcast comes from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative, connecting communities with the resources, infrastructure, and networks to ensure a vibrant local free press.
From KVPR in Fresno, this is Central Valley Daily. It's Election Day, Tuesday, November 4th. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. A Valley school district has seen a major improvement in student performance.
Over the last decade, students in Sanger Unified have actually outperformed their peers across the state on the statewide assessment.
Coming up, we'll learn about what's behind the success, but first, these headlines. Federal election monitors will be on hand in Fresno and Kern counties as voters head to the polls today to weigh in on Proposition 50. As KVPR's Carrie Klein reports, election monitors are not that rare.
Election monitors are common here, says James Coos. He's Fresno County's Registrar of Voters. In fact, the federal DOJ isn't the only agency sending them.
I am aware of four different jurisdictions, as well as another three advocacy groups.
That includes two state offices and the city of Fresno. Coos says many of them have been out here before. Their feedback sometimes relates to building codes or the Americans with Disabilities Act. One last week was concerned a Spanish interpreter could have been using misleading language. Coos doesn't know exactly how many monitors will be present or where. He asks them to make themselves visible.
We do ask all observers to have a name tag or name badge of some type identifying where they're from and who they are.
He says members of the public are also welcome to come watch as voting takes place. For KVPR News, I'm Carrie Klein.
The Fresno County Registrar of Voters says there's been a surge in mail-in ballots for Proposition 50. This signals California's special redistricting election is energizing voters. James Coos says that's rare for a special election when voter turnout is typically low.
There was a really big, good spike at the start. The first 10 days or so really were ahead of even last November. So we had a lot of front-loaded people knowing what they wanted to vote and getting their ballot back in really quick.
His office is also preparing for a solid turnout today at in-person polling places. To have your ballot counted, you must vote in person or get it postmarked by mail by close of business today. If you're not yet registered to vote, you can do that in person too. Fresno Congressman Jim Costa is leading a group of representatives from California who are pushing to restore millions in funding for higher education. The Federal Department of Education earlier this year rescinded $350 million from colleges designated minority-serving institutions. That was after a legal challenge against those colleges stemming from Tennessee. California has the largest number of colleges that serve minority students. Democratic legislators say stripping the funding hurts the state and the country's competitiveness on an international scale. California's Office of Service and Community Engagement is calling on Californians to volunteer at and donate to food banks as food assistance is delayed for 5.5 million people in the state. California's Chief Service Officer, Josh Friday, called the delay in SNAP benefits a statewide disaster.
The surge is real. The strain on our communities is real. And it's why we're stepping up. It's why the governor deployed the National Guard and the California Service Corps. And it's why we're calling on Californians to step up for each other as well.
Friday, who's a member of Governor Gavin Newsom's administration, criticized the Trump administration for the benefits delay amid the ongoing government shutdown, calling it cruel. Two federal judges ruled the federal government needed to use contingency funds to restart SNAP benefits. On Monday, President Donald Trump announced his administration would restart food assistance, but that its contingency fund would cover only half the amount needed. Farmers in Kings County will have to report how much groundwater they used following a court ruling last week. The requirement is part of a probation status for the Tulare Lake subbasin that adds extra scrutiny on water use thanks to a state groundwater sustainability law, known as SGMA. The Kings County Farm Bureau has sued the state to prevent these reporting requirements and added fees, but the 5th District Court of Appeals tossed out a ruling that blocked those requirements. Farmers will have to report their water use from between last July and this past September.
you start your day with Central Valley Daily and are looking for a companion program in the afternoon, there's All Things Considered. Hi, I'm Sarith Hawk. Each weekday afternoon, I'm on KVPR's broadcast, bringing you the day's local and national news. Join me for All Things Considered, weekdays from 3:30 to 6 on KVPR. You can also stream us online at kvpr.org, through your smart speaker, and on the KVPR app.
And now to our main story. The COVID-19 pandemic interrupted a lot of things, and perhaps most notable was K-12 education. Teachers and parents alike have struggled to find creative ways to re-engage students, boost test scores, and keep kids on track for college and careers. And while many are still fighting to restore the progress, one rural school district in Fresno County is setting a new standard. Sanger Unified, once a struggling school district, now has students beating statewide averages when it comes to English and math proficiency. And this is pretty staggering when you learn that the district was one of the lowest performing in the state not that long ago. LaSherica Thornton covers education in the Central Valley for our news partner EdSource, and she visited some classrooms in Sanger Unified to see what this district is doing differently. She joins me now and starts by giving us a little history on the district.
We actually have to go back to 20 years ago. In the early 2000s, Sanger Unified students ranked at the bottom of the academic performance system that measured student proficiency statewide. So, like, literally, they had like a 250 score with the 850 target. Tells you how bad it was, right? So the district and most of its schools at that time were classified by the state as needing improvement. And it was that classification in and of itself that really was the impetus for a cultural turnaround. This is according to the current superintendent who actually worked in the district in another role at the time. So the district really started at that point to improve. They started using research-based instruction. And by 2014, the district actually exited that program improvement status.
Okay.
And it actually became one of California's highest growth districts, really gaining both statewide and national recognition. And so since that point, over the last decade, students in Sanger Unified have actually outperformed their peers across the state on the statewide assessment. So,
what an incredible turnaround.
Right.
We're here today because the state is out with its annual test scores, and they show considerable improvement at Sanger Unified. So what kind of improvements has the district seen specifically?
Absolutely. So this most recent year, about 53%, which is most of the district students, they were either proficient or advanced in English compared to nearly 49% of students statewide. And then in math, 40% of Sanger Unified students were either proficient or advanced compared to about 37% of students statewide. So for Sanger, their students' English scores have actually returned to their pre-pandemic levels, which is, you know, great. And then math scores are only off by less than 3 percentage points from reaching that pre-pandemic level. So,
wow. So outperforming the state average and getting back to pre-pandemic levels. Okay. So what's behind the shift? Has the district updated its teaching methods in any way?
So according to district leaders, wouldn't call it an update, I guess, but they actually point to the same actions that brought the district out of improvement status in the early 2000s as being used to really respond to learning loss caused by the pandemic this time around. So those two things being what they consider effective instruction that they've established by teachers, by administrators, as well as those weekly professional learning communities. So when I say effective instruction, the district has actually identified things that it expects from its schools, its classes, all of its educators. And so for what they say is effective instruction, they want students engaged and talking in classes. They want them talking through problems. They want them justifying their answers. They want teachers connecting with students through things that relates to students. So like a fast food activity that their students can relate to. They also want, they call it balanced instruction. So making sure that no matter the subject, their students are writing and learning in that way. So those are some of the things. And then I'll kind of briefly talk about as well, educators working together and learning from each other. Like I said, that was a key thing. And so in those professional learning communities, they're really asking and answering hard questions every week. So What do our students need to learn? How do educators evaluate if they're learning it? What, in looking at that data, who is understanding it and who isn't? And if students aren't learning, how, as teachers, are we improving what we're doing? And how are we providing targeted support and making sure that that targeted intervention and support is different from the instruction that was in the class that they didn't comprehend? So those are, you know, some of the things.
Yeah, I think that shows there's a conscious effort not just to support students' well-being, but also provide teacher support in this sort of collaborative environment. So they're like, hey, I'm on the same page as you. This is what I'm dealing with in my classroom.
Absolutely.
That's really lifted the whole district.
Absolutely.
I know for part of your reporting, you got to observe a class at a Sanger Unified School. So what was that like?
Absolutely. So, and I'll just say, I absolutely love getting out into the classrooms. I actually got to visit three 8th grade math classes at Washington Academic Middle School. And what stood out to me, like I just said, the district expects everybody for there to be what they say effective instruction. And so I literally saw that. That was consistent across the board. So even though I had these three 8th grade math classes, there were components of the same thing. So I'll give you an example. They were all working on this activity, this fast food activity, which, like I said, relates to something that students can relate to. But one teacher, her way to engage students was, you're getting in these pairs and you're going to talk one-on-one to each other and explain why this was your answer. Explain it that way. Whereas in you had another teacher, her way of engaging her students was in group activities where they're having to talk through things. And specifically in that class, kind of what I saw was, when this is kind of somewhat different as well from other classrooms that I visited, is like they were going through something and the student said something that was obviously wrong. But instead of the teacher instantly saying, well, no, that's not right, she threw the question back at them and said, well, let's see. So tell me, is the large Coke and the large Sprite, are they the same price? Should they be the same price? You guys tell me. And don't, you know, don't forget, tell me why. And so literally you hear the students in the groups talking and you have, I heard a student say, oh, well, no, they're the same price. They're both the large. And so literally students learning from their own explanations and students going from having the wrong answer to the right answer on their own. That's something that I got to see in those classrooms.
Now, circling back to test scores, I could imagine someone hearing our conversation and thinking test scores are not always the best measure of academic outcomes, and there are other ways that districts should be or could be measuring success. So with Sanger Unified and just other school districts in general, are there other metrics that they're looking at to measure educational success based on your knowledge of that area?
Absolutely. I think you're gonna, or I know for me, I've heard, you know, from several people, yeah, test scores are important, but test scores are not the only measure of student success. Everybody's saying that, including Sanger Unified. Something that Sanger Unified kind of pointed to was, like, not only is it not based on test scores, but it's what teachers are doing every day to engage with parents and to engage with students. Like, those are, in and of itself, measures of success.
That was my conversation with LaSherica Thornton. She's a Central Valley education reporter with our news partner, EdSource. You can read her reporting and more education stories from across the state at edsource.org. And that is today's show. If you have a story idea for the podcast, maybe related to education in the Valley, don't hesitate to reach out. Email us your pitch to podcast@kvpr.org. Today's episode was produced by Jonathan Linden and KVPR with support from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. You can find the latest local news anytime at kvpr.org.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.